Hello and welcome to another edition of the World Junior Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. This time, of course, the 2020 edition. It's Andrew Walker from Sportsnet 650 here in Vancouver. Peter Labardius joins us from Calgary, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, and of course our junior hockey insider and expert on Sportsnet, Sam Cosentino, joins us from Toronto. As Labardius was saying in the emails today, it is one of the highlights of the year, getting to talk to you two guys about this big Christmas time holiday tournament coming up. How are you guys?
I am excellent, and I cannot wait for Boxing Day.
Yeah, doing great, guys. And isn't that something with technology? We can be in three different places at the same time and still talk to one another. You got to love it.
Can you live your life that way? Being in three different places at once? I've heard that that's a possibility.
Yeah. Lived it, eh?
Yeah.
Well, you guys traveling all the time. You guys probably don't never know what time zone you're actually in.
Well, there's a point to be had there.
Yeah, or what room you're staying in.
Yeah, I forgot the odd room number over the years.
Well, we did this a year ago, and we were previewing the tournament as it hit my backyard here in Vancouver in Victoria, and it was a young Canadian group. I think we didn't quite know what to expect a year ago, and it was one of those tournaments where at times they showed really well, guys, a year ago in Vancouver, but then they lose the big game, and all of a sudden they found themselves out of the medals for the fourth time in the last 7 years. Where would you, and we'll start here, where do you think we are right now in the Canadian, before we get to the specifics of the team, but the Canadian cycle right now in terms of competing?
Well, I like the 0-1 and the 0-2 groups for sure, and I think we've seen some evidence of that with the players that have been selected to go overseas with the one cut still to be made. I think 99 and 2000 were a couple of down years. And I think you could pretty much say that, you know, right across the world. Now, you know, there's going to be countries such as Finland and Russia that really never take that dip. But I think when you're looking at Canada specifically, I like the 0-1s, I like the 0-2s, the 99s and the 2000 not quite as much. And I think that's kind of where we are right now. And I guess the question that remains here is, are the 0-1s and 0-2s going to be good enough to get it done in what is traditionally a 19-year-old tournament?
And Sam, as I know, I've heard you document and talk about, whether it's on television or even in some of the great pieces that you write, you're right. This is not a great year around the world as far as the 2000 birthday is concerned. This will be a tournament where a lot of 18-year-olds in particular make a massive, massive impact. The tournament itself is just flat out changed. It is not anywhere near as much period a 19-year-old tournament the way it used to be, but it's so true. Everything is cyclical. Some age groups are far, far better than others, especially in our country, and I could not agree more. All you have to do is rewind the Hlinka-Gretzky tournament of not this past August, but the August before, and even this past August, the tournament that was held overseas, to understand that Canada's 0-1 and 0-2 groups are really good, really talented. And then the other problem is, for how long do you have them? And do you have them at 19 years of age anymore? And in this tournament, whether it's Canada, whether it's an incredible group of 18-year-olds from the United States of America, you know, the tournament itself is changing.
Well, yeah, and agreed. The NHL's getting younger and younger all the time, right? Yeah, and it's just it's a direct snowball effect from that, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure it is. Absolutely, the league does get younger each and every year. The salary cap has absolutely everything to do with that, because, you know, with how things are trending and with certain teams who are spending, you know, you take Toronto for an example, when you have $40 million tied into four or five people, it means that you better have some young people and you better have entry-level people in your lineup that can play. A matter of fact, you just don't have a choice anymore. And that also very much lends itself to, you know, young players have never been better. And
And
that's what this tournament is going to show us again in a few days. But, you know, you combine that with the fact that you just flat out need younger people based on what they make to come into your lineups in the NHL sooner.
Yeah, I agree. I think our players are getting a lot better. I really, really
do.
And that's something that at 18, 19 years old, I mean, you look at Svechnikov, another highlight reel goal with the lacrosse. You know, you look at where a guy like Quinn Hughes was. Yeah, he took 2 years in college, but he went in a bit earlier to Michigan, and now he looks like he's going to be a star. You look at Cale Makar, how he was able to step into the playoffs for Colorado and then be a real force going into this season with Colorado. And you think about all of these guys at 18, 19 years old, you're right. Our players are better, and they are more ready worldwide at the young age than they ever have been.
So with the head coach and the architect putting together this team, and Lou, you had mentioned thoughts on Dale and Mark Hunter. Has that changed how you put this group together, given it is becoming a younger tournament and you don't just get your hand-picked 19-year-olds released from the National Hockey League anymore?
Well, I think it's two different questions, and Sammy has known Dale and Mark for so long, whether it's through Memorial Cups and we've both had a history with him. Sammy has been around him so much over the last 10 or 12 years. And I don't know if who coaches and, the youth of the players is as big a story as who binds everybody together. I know that I have a lot of conversations, whether, it's about a bunch of different levels. But players aren't the same. And are they better? Absolutely. But do we very much now live in a world of, my agenda and, playing and all the different voices and all the different outside noise? My guess is that Dale and Mark are perfect to try and bring everybody together, because let's not forget, these are all stars in their own respective way, and everybody wants to be the guy, and everybody's used to being the guy, and I'm still a big believer in this. Can you get the buy-in for everybody to understand, in a sense, their roles, their ice time, and the most important thing to me that's kind of been lost at times is about winning and about your team winning.
Yeah, and you know what? That was a big point of conversation. I know at the camp, there was a lot of guys there that, because of their age, they're stars in their teams. And I think it was made very clear by the leadership group in management and in the dressing room to say, listen, guys, this is not going to be how it is in Sudbury if you're Quentin Byfield, or in Erie if you're Jamie Drysdale. You're not going to play your 25 and 30 minutes, and you're not going to be first power play and first PK. You're going to understand that you're going to have to take a bit of a backseat role here when it comes to the minutes that you're given and the situations that you're put in. So I think the people that went over there, the group of 24, is very much aware of what's gone on and what's going on and what's going to go on. And when I look at even the plight of Aiden Dudas, the player or the players, I'm sure, have been made very well aware that one may end up going home if Dudas is indeed able to perform due to his health concerns.
So has that changed? I was brought up, we were brought up in, when Canada was in its heyday, that whole, hey, you got to play your role. You're a star and you're going to take a back seat. I felt like that was almost a point of pride for a bunch of players, and I wonder if that has changed. Do the players themselves, guys, look at this tournament a little differently, more as a personal stepping stone? And I know we won gold 2 years ago, Canada did, but like I said, 4 years out of the medals, which is kind of unheard of over the last seven. Has the whole viewpoint from a player's standpoint changed on this tournament?
Yeah, I think so. I think to a certain extent. I mean, listen, you look at our players from the second they arrive at the program of excellence, whether it be in the Youth Olympic Games at 16, some of those players are identified, whether it's, the various cups, the Alberta Cup, the BC Cup, the OHL Cup, those sorts of things are identified as early as 14 and 15 years old. And then at 16, Youth Olympic Games, and then you move into the under-17s, and you're, typically your first year, your 16-year-old year in the league, and then you're looking at Alinka Gretzky, you're looking at under-18 Worlds, and I think from that moment that you're you know, blessed to be able to play in the program of excellence, I think there is a little bit of entitlement that goes along with that. And I think that's been lost a little bit, to be able to bring players back to say, hey, wait a sec, you've been identified as a great player, but not just that. You have been identified as a great teammate, a great person, and your play alone doesn't speak for what's going to happen moving forward. And the example I'll bring up to that end is a guy like Ryan Merkley. You know, he plays for the Hunters in London, and I'm sure that they fought to get him invited to the camp, and that never happened because there are some previous currency with Hockey Canada that, in my opinion, probably hurt his opportunity to move forward with this team. And while he may be a changed player, while his game has matured more, having witnessed it, I think some of that currency exists from the past. And as a result of that, a player like that is maybe used as an example, or maybe, you know, to put people on notice that there's more to it than just being a great player.
Being on this Canadian team, one thing that has never changed in my experience is how much it matters to be on the team. What I think has changed a little bit is sometimes how driven players are to win. And there's a difference. And I personally, and it may be a bit of a controversial way of looking at it, but I think it's a sign of the times. I think it's society. I don't think it's hockey. But there is no doubt that being on this team means everything to Canadian kids who have an opportunity to play in the World Junior. There is a lot that goes with it. There is stardom. There is an incredible way that they are treated by Hockey Canada and how they are taken care of. And I do. I think in this country now, more than ever, the challenge is there is a tremendous amount of pressure that goes hand in hand with competing on this stage. And I'll be honest, I don't think that the young men of today are maybe as well equipped to handle all that goes with it. They love the good part, but if you're going to play on that team in this country, and we can debate all we want, and we all three of us might have a different idea as to how important winning or what it should really mean, but I'm not into the Fair Play Cup, and I'm never going to be into the Fair Play Cup. And the bottom line is, winning still should matter, and being a good team and caring about one another should matter. And I think for the people that run the program, that coach the team, that try to bring it all together, and Sam, you have these conversations, I know it, because we have those conversations ourselves. You know, people might want to poo-poo it and not talk about it. These are different times. And I think getting to team can be more difficult than it ever has been.
And you know what, Wax, and you know what, Lou, I'll tell you this. You're not going to see the Fair Play Cup come Boxing Day. Not with this group.
Nope.
And to select Dale and Mark Hunter was quite the departure from what we've typically seen with Hockey Canada. I mean, they were coming as a pair. They weren't coming as individuals, where one guy can do it and the other can't. They were coming as a pair, they were coming with purpose, and they were coming to do it their way. Now, they haven't gotten everything exactly the way they want. But come December 26th, they're going to do it their way. They're going to win or lose, and they're going to do it their way. And that might mean, hey, maybe it's Bowen Byram out there for 2 minutes on the two-minute power play. And that might mean the 13th forward doesn't even see the ice. And that might mean the fourth line plays 3 minutes. And that might mean your first power play unit plays the entire 2 minutes of the power play. I think you're going to see pretty early on in the tournament that this is not going to be the Fair Play Cup. And that's probably why this departure was made, because I think there was a certain period there where the politics were getting in the way of going out and winning hockey games. The program of excellence is established for a reason, to identify the players, to move forward with those players, and then to go and win. Not about playing each guy, each line, 10 minutes a game. It doesn't work that way. It's to go out and win. And so that's why I think we've seen this departure. And, you know, everyone asked Dale, hey, why haven't you, you know, coached before? And they're asking Hockey Canada, why haven't these guys been able to coach before with what they've done in their junior programs? And no one will give you the honest answer. But quite frankly, it is a little bit of a different departure in terms of the coach and the staff really having a level of control that I don't think has always been present there.
And Sam, I just want to say this in regards to, you know, this subject. Throughout all the years, I don't think there has ever been a coaching staff that wasn't well put together by this country with the greatest of intentions. But to me, this is not right now about necessarily who coaches, although it is, but it's still, it's on the kids, and it's on the buy-in, and it's frankly, what's the standard as to what's acceptable? And those are hard, hard things, I think, in this day and age. My point is, I think for the kids themselves and how they arrive at this point and all the different outside influences and being stars in their own right, listen, I truly think it's never been a more difficult task to coach and guide and mentor young, talented people than it is today. I truly believe that.
Coaching has changed here, you know, with what's happened here the last couple of months. And I will say this, I was at every second of that camp. And to a man, to a player, just about every media member was asking, well, what's Dale all about? What's he like on the bench? What's he like in the room? And the takeaway from that, from every player that was asked that question was, well, he's calm. He's funny. He makes his point. He's not a yeller and screamer. He's not a, you know, a guy who's going to be hard on his players, but he's going to dictate by his ice time. Very much an old school approach, yes, in terms of ice time, without the old school yelling and screaming, mental games, all that sort of stuff. So I thought that was really interesting. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with how he coaches and the way he goes about his business, but it was really interesting to get that take from the players when speaking to the media scrums after the practices and the games and so on.
It is the 2020 World Junior Hockey Championship Preview Show here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Andrew Walker, Sam Cosentino in Toronto, Peter Labardius in Calgary. We have plenty to discuss over the next 2 hours, and I do want to take a bit of a ride back in a time machine, and it's very arbitrary, I know. And if you want to feel old, well, 20 years ago, World Juniors was in full swing, and it was in Sweden. And that group 20 years ago, I almost wonder, when you look at the medals and how they were handed out, I wonder if we're at a similar cycle, guys. Because in the year 2000, well, as we know, we were just recently removed from a summit after we blew it in 1998 and finished in eighth position.
Lost,
I believe,
to,
yeah,
Kazakhstan 6-3.
Yeah.
Not that I remember.
And and we're still a few years away from really starting to go on that big time run, beginning with the Dream Team in 2005. But 2000, what do you remember about that team that finished with at the time, you know, pretty happy, I think, to get a bronze medal in a win over the States. You look at what I remember anyway, it was the up-and-coming Jason Spezza, who kicked off a pretty good run of his own at the World Juniors. Danny Heatley was there from the University of Wisconsin. Manny Malhotra sent back from the New York Rangers. And funny how times change or how they go cyclical. It was kind of a throwback defense in the sense of, hey, Jay Bouwmeester, Matt Kinch, Steve McCarthy, those guys could skate, and that's kind of the first and foremost what we see in 2020.
Yeah, Brad Richards was part of that group. I'm not sure a lot of people would be familiar with the gentleman who led that tournament in scoring. His name was Brandon Reed, who had 4 goals, 5 assists for 9 points. And
well, here in Vancouver, they would be.
Oh,
because he was a very brief celebrity, and wouldn't you know it, the two guys that were right up there in tournament scoring were the Sedins as well.
Yeah, they were okay, and they weren't even bad the year before in Winnipeg in 1999. That was an interesting group. It was a young group. You know, you think about Bouwmeester and Spezza and where they were and what age they were and how young. Steve McCarthy was a guy, again, he was young. They truly that year were too young. In that tournament, one of the things I'll never forget is the gold medal game. After years and years and years of most recently watching great final after great final, That one in 2000 stunk. 0-0, the Czech Republic and the Russians. Nobody wanted to score, went to a shootout, and they finally decided, you know what, we've been at this for far too long. The Czechs are going to win. And they did.
Come on, Milan Kraft.
Yeah, Milan, old number six. Come on, Milan Kraft.
The former Raider.
Yes, well done. Milan Kraft.
It's Andrew Walker, Sam Cosentino, and Peter Labardius over the next hour and a half. Plenty to get to. We're going to preview this tournament. We're going to look at all these teams, the prospects you got to watch, and, of course, an in-depth look at Team Canada when we come back. The goaltenders, the forwards, the defense, and expectations for the 2020 World Juniors in the Czech Republic. It is the World Junior Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the show. It is the 2020 World Junior Hockey Championship Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We got a great panel as we do every year. Andrew Walker here from Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. Sam Cosentino, our junior hockey expert at Sportsnet, joins us from Toronto. And Peter Labardius from Sportsnet 960, The Fan in Calgary. And, of course, the color analyst on Flames broadcast on Sportsnet as well, as we continue to preview what lies ahead for Team Canada beginning on Boxing Day in the Czech Republic. It's a year removed from not finishing in the medals, guys, here in Vancouver, Victoria in 2019. The year before that, the late-game heroics from Tyler Steenbergen, and they win the gold medal in 2018. So we'll start with expectations. Canada is, if you're a betting man, the odds-on favorite to win this tournament, as they usually are at 2.75-1. But, well, as always, there's a lot of competition.
No doubt. And so what would be my expectation of this club would be, I think a medal would be a very good accomplishment. And here's why. First of all, the youth of the team. And second of all, the inexperience and goal. And just about every time that this tournament is played overseas, the goaltender for Canada is a factor. Now, that still may very well be the case with this group of three, but there's no track record to say that that's going to happen. You know, at least at times when you've looked at some of the goaltenders in the past where it's been overseas, you can say, oh, yeah, I get it, pretty good in league play. Oh, yeah, pretty good at under-18s. Oh, yeah, he's had a standout year. Oh, yeah, the last month he's been on fire. You can usually find those type of things, especially with some international experience as a background. You just don't really have it with this group. And you know how important goaltending is. Show me a good coach, I'll show you a good goalie. And that's what makes me somewhat concerned about this group, the youth and the goaltending inexperience. And not to say that they're poor goaltenders in their own right. They all deserve to be where they are, but there's no real track record of international success amongst the group.
There is no Carter Hart here. There just absolutely isn't. And to Sam's point, I think two factors really go hand in hand, and I'm completely on board with everything that he just said about the goaltending, and I would expect that potentially Olivier Rodrigue, the Edmonton second rounder, might have a small lead. But I also think to get to that point, this could be a group that starts one way and again changes, and that won't surprise me. Dawes has had an unbelievable year in Guelph, and who would know him better than Dale Hunter, which, don't kid yourself, is a factor. Hofer has just had a sensational year in Portland. You look at that 935 save percentage. And then I'd take it one more step, because I think this area is equally as important. When I go back to 2009, when I go back to 2015, and I think about that defense in Toronto and Montreal, when our group, to me, has four what I would call world-class type people on defense, I really like our chances, especially with some experience. And at this point in time in the preview show, I want to personally thank one of my favorite people in the sport, Lou Lamoriello, for not making Noah Dobson available. You're going to get six Christmas cards from me, Lou, from this Lou. And thank you as well for making Oliver Wahlstrom available for the United States. So another Christmas card on the way. And why I bring it up and have a little fun with it in doing it, I would feel incredibly different about Canada's chances of winning this tournament with Noah Dobson. I think he was such a potential key piece. When you look at Smith, McIsaac, who's been hurt, Bowen Byram, who to me is an absolute stud, and I expect him to be in the National Hockey League, probably making a difference. If you had Noah Dobson, and Sam forgot more about him than even I will know, but I know I've watched him win back-to-back Memorial Cups with my own two eyes, thought he played well in Vancouver. This guy's a winner, and he knows how to do it, and he knows how to do it under adverse situations. So I'm a little heartbroken, the fact that someone who hasn't played very much, but again, let's not talk about people who aren't there, but people who are. And I
by the way, was scratched last night.
Yeah,
as of today's taping.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. And didn't notice that either. Thanks, Lou. So. Appreciate it.
Yeah, but, well, from one Lou to another. You're not getting Christmas cards.
No,
Christmas. I hear you.
Yeah, I love your coach, Lou, but you right now, you can stick it. Even though I have a lot of incredible respect for you and what you've done. But I do like the fact, though, that you have some veteran people on this back end who have been there before. And the guy who really fascinates me, especially without Dobson, I think a guy who's really about to have a coming out party, I just have a gut feeling on it, is Drysdale. I'm a massive, massive fan. And I just have a sense that as this tournament goes on, he may not start in a big role. I just have a funny inkling that he might find his way into more minutes.
A little Ryan Ellis-like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and as you guys know, I mean, as the NHL gets younger, as this tournament gets younger, it's not easy. Forget to star in this tournament for a 17-year-old defenseman. To make this club, there's been six guys since 1991 that have done that for Team Canada. We mentioned one earlier in Jay Bouwmeester. Drysdale is only the seventh, right? So this is uncharted territory.
Yeah, it's. I've watched him quite a bit this year. He's legit. He is legit, fellas, let me tell you.
Andre Tournier, who Sam has known forever and so have I, referred to him yesterday as a genius. That was his word about how he processes the game, his feel, how calm he is. And, you know, whether it was watching Canada-Russia on TV, I see a special guy. And I remember my first viewing of him at what they call the OHL Gold Cup a couple of years ago in Kitchener-Waterloo, and just how he processed it and felt it and how poised he was. This Erie Otter defenseman, I think the world of this guy. I really do. And my guess is that his draft stock is about to go up even another notch or two.
On the blue line also, and I do want to get your guys' thought on this player who has had, well, he's a great player, but the Vancouver Giants this season are not what they were last year, at least up until Christmas, and that is Bowen Byram. We saw him go in the draft fourth overall this past year in Vancouver, and I remember talking to a couple scouts guys, even the week of, and we all knew that Jack Hughes is going one, and we all knew that Kaapo Kakko was likely going second, and then it was either Bowen Byram somewhere at 3, 4, 5. He ends up going number four to Colorado. And I remember one scout in particular told me, he's like, I know that Hughes is dynamic, and I know that Kakko is this great player, but said, I look at Bowen Byram, and I see this guy as a 25 to 30 minute a night defenseman at the National Hockey League level that wears a letter and plays all situations and plays in your top pair for a decade. And he said, I don't care how good the other two guys are. I consider that at number one overall. And when you see Bowen Byram at his best, he's unlike, you know, someone that you've seen in the Western Hockey League for a long, long time, maybe going back to Scott Niedermeyer. Is he going to be a bit of a breakout candidate on the national and international stage this year?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think playing for his home club in Vancouver, I think at times he's been guilty of doing a little bit or trying to do a little bit too much. You know, the team dynamic is different there, as you mentioned, walks, and you know, he's trying to get them back to where they were last year, and that may not be possible with, you know, having gotten younger, graduated some pretty good players, so on and so forth. So I think he's been guilty of doing a little or trying to do too much for his Vancouver Giants team. But this guy's a game changer. He's an offense driver, and when he's at his best, he needs to be a Buffalo. He needs to be able to roam. And so how is that going to happen? That's going to happen with some trust that he's going to be able to take care of the defensive side of things when he's in his own zone. It's going to be some trust that if he wants to go roam and be first in on the forecheck, that he better be first back. And if he can gain that trust, which he started to earn that currency going back to camp now, and he will continue to do that moving forward into some European games, pre-tournament games, that I think he's going to be a guy who I have to agree is going to be a real difference maker back there.
Who was the first Western Hockey League defenseman ever to lead the playoffs in scoring?
This is him.
Bowen Byram.
Yep.
26 points. Who was the best Canadian defenseman, maybe the best defenseman that I saw with my own two eyes in the last 2 days of the World Junior Summer Showcase with a lot of awfully good people in attendance? Bowen Byram.
Yep.
Who, late in a game with not a whole lot going on recently in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada, Russia, takes the game on his back, scores a massive goal? Bowen Byram. Again, for me, and you guys have both known me for a long time, one thing I am a massive believer of is not everybody can get it done when it is hard. This guy already, at a very young age, seems to be at his best when it is most difficult. I think he is going to have a massive impact, will have to. I watched him in the spring. Was incredibly impressed. It's funny, when I saw him, and Sammy was there too at the Hlinka in 2018, Hlinka Gretzky, I thought he was just okay. But then last year he blew the doors off the rest of the year, talked already about the playoffs, 26 goals, 71. Sammy called him a rover, and yet he doesn't necessarily have the biggest blast. This is a guy you better account for even below the hash marks, because he's liable... You know, he's liable to show up anywhere and make plays, and that's what he does. And if you have the right stay-at-home, as my good friend on the other end of this conversation, Tab, so many years ago, if you have the right steady Eddie with him, there's going to be some pretty amazing things that this guy can do. And I think part of it in Vancouver is the challenge isn't the same. I believe that. Mm-hmm. I believe players go through
that. Yeah.
And I also agree with Sam in the sense that, you know, that was a hard, hard act to follow. And I also think after the World Junior is over, he'll take off again in the second half because he'll be more dialed in. But the other thing that kids have trouble with when they're that elite is they get caught thinking about what's next rather than what's in the present and what's now. And I think when he was sent back to junior hockey, if you were to ask him and sit him down, and maybe Sam has had the chance to do this, I bet his focus has been on Boxing Day. And I really believe that's how kids like that, and it's not to say that he hasn't tried his heart out and probably tried to do too much this year in Vancouver, but I know how people are wired. And my guess is the next big thing for him is this.
We talked about Bowen Byram. We mentioned Jamie Drysdale, obviously going to be an underage player to watch. What do you make, Sammy, of the rest of this defense group? And we mentioned they don't get Noah Dobson back, but there is Ty Smith, the first rounder of the Devils. Interestingly enough, Kevin Ball, who just got dealt in the Taylor Hall trade, big week for him, but he's going to be on this club as well. What do you make of the rest of the blue line?
Well, movers, for sure. I mean, if I'm looking at a shutdown pair, I'd think about Kevin Ball and Jacob Bernard Docker right away, but don't sleep on Bernard Docker and his ability to shoot the puck. He can really, really fire it. Then I look at Addison, and, you know, he's a guy who was of great intrigue to me, Kalen Addison, Pittsburgh Penguins prospect. And, you know, I'm sitting there watching some of the camp games with Steve Staios, and I'm like, Addison, I mean, I like him, but I don't know if he belongs at this elite level. And he said, Sam, take a look. Watch when he gets the puck. Look at how crisp his passes are. Look at how on time they are. And look at how good the team on the ice is when he's on the ice in terms of their transitional play. And so I watched for that, and then I started to get it. So really interesting there in that he's a good puck transporter, a good puck mover. You know, you look at Drysdale as a bit of a wild card there. Mikhaizik's a nice steady Eddie guy back there. Ty Smith. I really like their back end. I really, really like the back end because I think Byram can be a game changer. And I look at Drysdale as being the wild card, but I look at some calmness and some steadiness back there when it comes to guys like Mikhaizik and Smith. And I like to have that calming presence back there with some age and some experience. Both of those guys being returning guys, I think, is really key.
And I love the fact that, like Sammy said, they have a little of everything, and they also have people that can run not one but two power play units, depending how you go. And when you think about how this tournament is going to start, and I know we'll probably get there, but I have a lot of years you can wade into the pool. Well, you better dive in from the 10-meter level on this tournament, because when it's the United States and Russia in games one and two, that makes this tournament beyond intriguing in what's an incredibly difficult pool for Canada and its competition. I don't know if I've ever seen a pool that Canada's been in that's been quite like it.
It feels like there's been tournaments over the years, and I've been critical of this, and I do think that sometimes maybe we lose interest, but Canada almost gets a warm-up. It was, you know, there's the Swiss on day one and maybe the Germans on day three, and you win these going away 6-1, 7-1, and it's this gradual build-up to the big games and then on New Year's Eve. But you're right, this is the proverbial group of death, Lou, and for Canada, like, it's put up or shut up right away in this tournament.
Yeah, you don't have time. And in a sense, I think that's a great thing. I think it's going to be fantastic for the tournament. And whether it was this summer, the one thing that I don't think anyone can question is when Canada plays the United States, it's just special. It's special. Mm-hmm. There is true rivalry. There's lots of reasons for it. The United States is a true hockey power. What a way to kick it off. You take a look at Boxing Day in this tournament. A matter of fact, if I'm an organizer, don't be afraid to save just a little for down the road in this event. Yeah. But when you have the Russians and the Czechs, Canada and the United States, and on the other side of the groupings, Sweden and the Finns on day one?
Yeah. Day one.
That's day one.
Yeah, let's go.
You know, like, can we go from day one to January 2nd when the playoffs start? Because day one is as spectacular when you think about this field, the teams, who makes up this team. You know, Christmas is great and open your presents, but at my house in Mississauga, the morning of the 26th, don't talk to me. Don't look at me. Don't come near me. Leave me in a room. Don't bring the kids. Let's buckle up.
Come on, Santa.
Santa's gone. And get rid of wherever he needs to go. Get lost.
Well, he's wearing the right color at least, hey, Lou?
Oh, you got that right.
Yeah. It is the 2020 World Junior Hockey Championship preview show. Of course, Boxing Day is mentioned in the Czech Republic, Canada, and the U.S. So what about up front, guys? Like, we've seen so many different versions of Team Canada. We've seen a one that we thought would be offensively challenged, and it's all hands on deck. We've seen groups score goals for fun at this tournament, and we've seen varying levels of success with both of those groups. So what is the theme? What is the collection of this year's group? Now, the one thing, when looking man for man, they got a lot of guys that in their draft were touted as, this is the fastest guy in his draft, this is the fastest guy in his draft. We're talking about a Foodie or a Nikhil Thomas. Is speed, is that going to be the calling card here more than anything?
Yeah, no question. Speed will be a big thing. Work ethic will be something that will be noticed and rewarded. There's no question about it. But when I look at how Dale Hunter coaches in London and how I think he's going to approach this tournament is, you better manage pucks. So I don't care how fast you are, how talented you are, how gifted you are. You better be managing pucks, and you better, in particular, manage that puck well between the blue lines. Because if you don't manage it there, nighty-night. You're not going to get any opportunity to try and dig yourself out of that hole. That has always been a key to the success of the London Knights Hockey Club. You look at their trap and transition style of play, snuff plays out in neutral ice as far as their own blue line, get it back going the other way. And once you have it, go nuts. Do whatever you want with it. But you better manage it. You better manage it properly when you're in neutral ice. So, yeah, there's going to be speed in that trap and transition. The success of that style of game is predicated on speed, because if you're starting from a standstill after a puck gets turned over and you want to turn it back the other way and create odd mans, you better be able to have the speed to do it. Your first step quickness is really, really important. And when you go down that forward group, you see a lot of that first step quickness. And I think that's playing into the style of game that Dale Hunter wants to play.
Sam, I couldn't agree more if I tried. Jeff Ward, the interim head coach of the Calgary Flames, has a great phrase. And he talks about checking for your chances. Yes, we can talk about who's going to score, and that's vitally important in the sport. But at this level and at the high, high levels of this sport, your ability to defend elite-level people is usually the determining factor between winning and losing. And look no farther than the type of lineup that Canada is going to have to deal with in that group of Americans and the American forwards on Boxing Day. Your forwards' ability to dial in when they don't have it. The greatest thing that gets lost sometimes in discussing and analyzing this sport is this. The better you defend, the better you hound pucks to get it back means the more that you do what? That you have it. And the more that you have it gives your skill people more of an opportunity to be successful. Your ability to defend and check other people's elite people, massive. Massively important. To me, it starts there and it almost ends there.
We do celebrate when someone is released from the National Hockey League to come back to this tournament, and maybe sometimes to a disadvantage, we put them on this pedestal. Where does Barrett Hayden fit in? How important is he, the fifth overall pick from 2 years ago, to the chances of this group?
Well, I think he slots in as the number one center. And because he's a highly responsible player, yet has the skill that if he's going to hunt pucks down, get him back, he's that typical guy who can transition quickly and then be dangerous once he has it. But, you know, Dale Hunter was so excited for his return. He commented at camp and said, listen, maybe most importantly is the leadership up front. Yeah, we've got Joe Valeno there, you know, and he was great to get back from the pros, and he's going to be a big piece of things moving forward. But Hayden brings that extra level, that little bit more. And, of course, he's very familiar with Dale Hunter, having played in the Western Conference of the Ontario Hockey League, so he knows what Barrett Hayton is all about. But you're looking at that 200-foot game, NHL experience, plenty of skill, and maybe most importantly, the leadership that Barrett Hayton brings.
I don't think that you can ever underestimate, and I know a lot of our focus today, and for good reason, has been about youth and young people, but it matters to have gone through the process, because the process matters. And listen, if that loss that a number of these players were a part of last year in Vancouver still doesn't really hurt, then I don't want you. That needed to hurt. That needed to stink. Use any adjective that you want. And generally, you know, and all I have to do is think back to 2004, and that was a great group that lost in Helsinki, Finland. But that hurt. As much as it was the dream team in 2005, if you were there to see those tears and that pain and that disappointment, there was no way. And I know they were arguably the most talented team of all time, with NHL Hall of Famers down the road and Olympic gold medals, so I'm not discounting that. But those guys last year who were there and gave up that tying goal and then the heartbreaking overtime loss to the Finns in a quarter, that matters. And I truly believe that with Hayton, with Valeno, you know, those experiences can really make it. You don't want to feel that way again.
And Lafreniere.
You don't want to feel that. And the neat thing is for those kids, guess what? There's a lot of kids last year, including a guy like Dobson, you don't get a chance to fix it. You don't always get in life a chance to fix the things that hurt most. Needs to hurt. Because hurt and disappointment and adversity can help you eliminate it. So to have Hayton, to have Valeno, to have gone through that hard experience, I think that's really valuable. I really do.
I think Lafreniere, I mean, he experienced it on two levels, from a team perspective, but from a personal level as well. And what he's done in the Quebec League this year is kind of next level stuff. I mean, we had him a couple of weeks ago, and my goodness, he's something else. He makes things happen every time out there. Like, it's amazing. But I think that two-level hurt is something that's really going to drive this guy this year. And he's going to be a fun player to watch this tournament.
Well, I'm glad you brought him up. Making the team at 16 a year ago, scored the one goal in five games, but has returned with a vengeance to the Quebec League this year. And we are going to talk about him when we come back. Is Alex Lafreniere, is he the next one? Is he going to be that player this year that really breaks out on an international level? We'll get to it. Andrew Walker, Sam Cosentino, Peter Labardius. It is the 2020 World Hockey Junior Championship Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the 2020 World Junior Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. One of the highlights of our year, it's Andrew Walker all the way out here in Vancouver, Sportsnet 650, joined by Sam Cosentino from Toronto and Peter Labardius from Sportsnet 960, The Fan in Calgary. We have looked at the theme for Hockey Canada this year. We've gone up and down the roster. Next up, who Canada will be facing, who to watch out for. But first, one name that I do want to get a little more in-depth is maybe the next one in the gauntlet of next one, and he is 17-year-old forward Alex Lafreniere, who is absolutely lighting up the Quebec League this year with well over 2 points per game.
He's only got 70.
In 32, it's a good season. So, as a returning player, the odd player that played in this tournament at 16 years old, what do we make of his year? What do we make of his role on this team, guys?
Really interesting to me to watch this guy in our Canada-Russia series. He didn't participate in that series, and you know, I think he's been dealing with an ankle issue. When he went to camp, he didn't participate in anything on ice in Oakville over the 4 days, and surely that time off is going to be really helpful for this guy, because if you can do it on an ankle that's about 75% at over 2 points per game, and right in the company with the McDavids and the Tavareses where they were at this point in their careers, you know, he's not too far removed from being thought of in those circles. Now, what's different about this guy is, you think about Connor McDavid and just how dynamic he is. And you notice every time he's out on the ice. And I think back to John Tavares. And my thoughts about John were, yeah, you know what, he played pretty well today. Didn't really jump out at me. And then you look down and you have 3 or 4 points. And I think Lafreniere is a lot like that. A lot of subtlety in his game. A lot of things that are done in his game that don't necessarily, you know, translate to goals and assists, where he might be the first guy on the backtrack, sets up the play, initiates the breakout, and as a result of what happens, he doesn't end up getting an assist. But this guy does a lot of things well. He plays well away from the puck. He's extremely smart. He makes those around him better. And he has more of an impact on the game on the wing than you would normally expect. And that's what's really fascinated me about this guy. His ability to do things in all three zones, show off the subtleties of his game, do it on an ankle at 75%, and still do it at the level of the Tavareses and the McDavids.
He does it all. He is incredibly complete. Is he as dynamic as the people that Sam just talked about? No, he's not. He's not Jack Hughes dynamic. He's certainly not Connor McDavid. But if you think about every aspect that you need, ability to check, defend, get it done below the hash mark, see the game, make plays, defend people, I think he's the complete package. I really do. And, you know, I really became familiar with him at the 2018 Hlinka-Gretzky tournament. Had 11 points. That really good 2001 age birthday for Canada that won the tournament, but wasn't easy. Maybe they shouldn't have, because I'm not sure that tying goal the against US the game. U.S. Should have counted. But anyway, yeah, we'll take
shouldn't
it.
Shouldn't have.
That one was for Lou Lamoriello.
Christmas Lou.
Yeah, Christmas Lou from Lou. But that was a tournament, too, that he didn't necessarily always wow you in the way that other people wowed you, including even players in that tournament, whether it was Broberg at times or Podkolzin or the two young Swedes who, you know, we might talk about before this show is over. But the subtleties that Sam talked about, and Sam used two words in regards to Bowen Byram. I use the same two words about Alexis Lafreniere. Game changer. Mm-hmm. John Tavares, 2009, Ottawa, Ontario, against the United States, Christmas Eve, Canada down 2-0 in one of the greatest World Junior games I've ever attended and seen with my own eyes. John Tavares, that day in Ottawa, may have played one of the greatest games I've ever seen him play at any level. And I could see Lafreniere, maybe it'll be Boxing Day, having that same type of impact. And in fact, if Canada's going to win the gold medal, I think he's going to have that kind of an impact.
Well, I think, like, ever since Crosby, when it comes to the NHL draft, I think everyone's been in a hurry to crown the next one or overuse this term generational, when I think in reality, Crosby was that guy, and we didn't have another guy like that until Connor McDavid. And there's nothing wrong with Steven Stamkos and Austin Matthews and John Tavares, but we got ahead of ourselves. People were calling Angelo Esposito the next one before he even got to his draft year and obviously slipped and did not go first overall. So is Lafreniere, and you keep using the name John Tavares, is that more the wheelhouse for this guy?
For me, it is. For me, that's a perfect comparable. Maybe the one difference is when John was being talked about in terms of his draft, some people were concerned about his skating ability, and I think, you know, for those of you that watch him in the National Hockey League regularly, that's something that in his game has really improved, and he's come a long way in that regard. I don't think Lafreniere is starting off in a situation where people are worried about his skating at all. And again, when you look at the point totals, the subtleties in his game, how smart he is, you know, his ability to play with pace, make others around him better, and doing it from the wing. Yeah, John Tavares is a really, really good comparable, in my eyes, of this player and what you'll see production-wise from him at the next level and what we may very well see from him for Canada during this tournament.
Impact on the wing. That's not easy, but he has that kind of ability.
Well, let's take a look at the field, guys, and you mentioned earlier the so-called group of death. It's going to be Canada and the U.S. right away on Boxing Day, and it's a real high point for the Americans, obviously. We just saw a whole ton of guys go in the NHL draft, one after the other, all from that developmental program. Spencer Knight is a highly coveted netminder. He's going to likely start for the States, so what do we make of their competition on day one? What cycle is the United States in right now?
Well, I think pretty similar to where Canada is in terms of some of the youth. When you look at some of the 01s, you know, you're not getting that 02 influx, but definitely with some of the 01 born players, the players selected in the 2019 draft, whether it's, you know, Zegras or Turcotte, Nick Robertson's having a really good year. You know, a little bit more depth and age and experience in the back end, which I like. You want to have that. If that's a position, you know, you definitely want to have that. Age and experience in the back end. Keandre Miller, you know, you think about guys of
Samuelson.
Of that ilk. Samuelson, of course. So when I look at their group in the entirety, you know, three great guys in goal. Starts with Spencer Knight. You know, he's projected to be a star in the National Hockey League before too long. You look at some age and some experience in the back. And then you look at the skilled younger guys, the 01-borns up front, and I really like the composition of this team.
For me, they're as good as anybody in this tournament. They really are. and they're so dynamic in their top six and top nine, and maybe one name that Sammy didn't use was Cole Caufield.
Yes.
And
yep.
This 18-year-old Montreal first rounder, 15th overall, his ability to score is sensational. I think he's Alex DeBrincat, but maybe at a higher level. And that guy's a pretty good NHL player and was an incredible junior who scored more than 53 years in a row. And that in this day and age is not easy to do. So, you know, even going back to my time in Plymouth this summer, to watch him go about his business, the way he finds holes, the way he can finish, the puck for a little guy gets off. His release is absolutely stellar. And you don't break Alexander Ovechkin's world under 18 record of 13 with 14 goals, you know, if you're not special. Now, granted, playing with Jack Hughes certainly didn't hurt. And I think we're going to see him on probably their number one line with a player in the United States that I was so impressed with. Because when you see people with your own two eyes, it's different. You know, you can watch on TV all you want. But when I saw Turcotte this summer with my own two eyes, complete, smart, does it all, can make plays, can skate. The LA Kings, well, they're not there yet, but even if you look at some of the pieces on the way, including, does Arthur Kaliev score?
Oh, and how?
And how? and there's another top six guy for the United States, very likely. This is a very talented team, like Canada. Some of its best people are 18 years of age or younger. And another player this summer, and Sam's seen a lot of them in person. Again, another guy that I got a chance to watch at the Hlinka Gretzky, Nick Robertson.
Yes, sir.
Nick Robertson could be a big, big piece in this tournament. Second round pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Another guy who can flat out score. Oof. What a matchup. What an unbelievable opening day. And you know what? Throw the rest of the groups out. Let's have a best of seven. Let's call it something else. Let's bring Lou Lamoriello in and go from there. You know, I'm having fun, but the respect I have for that man and what he has done is absolutely second to none. And, you know, I got to have some fun.
Well, and parity is the name of the game, too. And it's still not easy to win gold at this tournament. I mean, we saw Canada win from 05 to 2009, obviously the run of five in a row. But since that time, it's been one country after another, everybody taking turns. The United States only have four gold medals in their history. Those have all come in the last 15 years. But also, guys, in terms of the cycle of USA Hockey, they've medaled the last 4 years at the World Junior. No other nation has done that. And it's the first time the States have ever done that in their history.
No, they're a formidable, formidable opponent, and it continues to be that way. It's not going to change anytime soon.
Get used to it.
Yeah, and I do believe it starts from some of the things that are grass level and moving forward, and the centralization of the program has obviously been really key for their success, and keeping that group together, and then keeping some of the fringe guys who aren't quite there yet involved at the World Junior A Challenge or at the Hlinka Gretzky. You know, they've got a nice mix of how they're able to treat their top-end players. And just because you might play in the Hlinka Gretzky in the World Junior A Challenge, it doesn't mean you're not going to get your chance, whether it's at the under-20s or at some point in the program. So I really like how they've mixed things around and given more players more opportunity to participate in those high-level events.
I'll be honest with you. For as talented as they've now been going on 15, 16, 17 years, they should have more gold medals. They've had that kind of talent. There are very few years in this event. There's the odd exception because, you know, going into this draft, to me, would be one of the examples. This isn't necessarily an elite U.S. birth year, but more often than not lately, including last year, they're as gifted and as talented as anybody, and they are in this event, in my opinion, on an annual basis.
Yes.
It's Andrew Walker, Sam Cosentino, and Peter Labardius. It's the 2020 World Junior Hockey Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. It brings us to Team Sweden. Talk about a team that should have more gold medals. They maybe are the Atlanta Braves of this event. They have a dubious streak when it comes to round-robin play. They haven't lost for a long, long time yet. Only the one gold medal in recent vintage to show for it, and that was back in 2012 in Alberta, Calgary, and Edmonton, a Mika Zibanejad overtime winner to get by Team Russia. So what do we make of this team, again, one that is littered with big names, big prospects, and NHL draft picks?
Tough to beat this group, too. It's the same sort of thing. Now, the complexion of this team may change as early as day one. You talked about it, Pete. I mean, there's anyone who wants to end that streak, I think it would be the neighbors. Oh, yeah. So it's going to be on right away. But I like what they bring to the table. Again, a lot of really good balance here. When you look at what they're able to do on the back end, the addition of Rasmus Sandin, I think, is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. I think Lundqvist is, you know, he's a good player. You get Söderström. You have
Broberg.
A lot of different elements back there. Broberg, stud. So I really, for me, their success is predicated on what happens on the back end. Now, having said that, the one concern I do have is, are they going to be able up front? Höglander, Berggren, you know, are these guys going to be able to get it done up front? Raymond, Holtz. I think they're going to have to lean on those two younger guys maybe more than they want to, because likely when you look at this group, those are two of the more skilled players. And if those guys don't perform, and if you shut those guys down, I think you do have an opportunity here to maybe, you know, throw a speed bump at Sweden. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. But there's not going to be any lack of opportunity for that forward group based on what you see in the back end to be able to get plenty of chances. How many of those chances they're going to be able to cash would be my question mark with this hockey club.
This sounds sarcastic, but it's not meant to be. Does anyone remember the last time they lost a round-robin game? Because I have a pretty good memory, and I think the number is 48.
Yep.
48-0 in the round robin. That is one of the most incredible records in sport. And to imagine that they have that one win, Sammy was in attendance, he called that final game, Andrei Makarov, the goalie, and it only took them 58 shots to finally break that tie, with Zibanejad coming in off the right wing side to finally beat him, because Makarov took over in the semifinal against Canada when Vasilevsky couldn't get it done. So it is just, it's hard to fathom that this group does not have more, you know, wins themselves. The 2010 team in Saskatoon was so good. I think one of their greatest teams was in their own country in 2014, and they lose to Rasmus Ristolainen and the Finns in overtime in that tournament, right in their own backyard. Last year, you know, they were in a almost pool of death with the Finns in the United States. They won the pool and then lose 2-0 to Switzerland in a quarterfinal. They just have not always had an ability to elevate against better teams at the right time. And it's stunning to me. I don't think this group, and Sweden is another example, guys, about, you know, the 2000 birthday, especially up front, and even a little bit on defense.
Yeah.
Because those two kids, and they're great, and one of them is banged up right now in Raymond, and we'll see how that goes. But Holtz and Raymond, they're tremendous talents. Two guys up front that I think have a chance to be difference makers. One has already played 22 times for the Winnipeg Jets. When they received David Gustafsson back this year, that's big. He was their captain at the World Junior Summer Showcase. Big, strong. He's a pro. He's a pro. And that will help their leadership. He's been there before. He played last year. Samuel Fajamo. Another L.A. pick.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good this summer at the World Junior Summer Showcase. Had 4 goals. Those are two guys up front, and I love the back end. I don't know the status as of this taping on Boquist, what might happen there, but don't forget about Bjornfot. the guys that Sammy already talked about, Lundqvist, the Rangers first rounder from 2018. This tournament, frankly, is loaded with some excellent people on the back end.
As Sweden almost always is, Sam mentioned the forwards, and coming up later on the preview show, I do want to talk about how, as fans, maybe our relationship with this tournament has changed, and one of the reasons, I think, is the whole rebuild draft culture in the National Hockey League. Player or fans know that the prospects, guys you have in your system, sometimes are just as important as who you have on your roster. And I think that fans have really started to pick up on how their prospects are doing, especially if your team's not in contention. Point is, I think listeners here at Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver will be keeping a very close eye on Nils Höglander, a highlight reel type of player over in Sweden. What do you guys expect from Nils Höglander? How have you liked his year, and what are fans? What do we have in store?
It's like a little fire truck, a little ball of energy, a little ball of hate. And I think there was a lot of talk about this guy going in the first round last year, and when that didn't happen. Yeah, you go back and you play in your league and you do your things, but you still want to prove to the rest of the world that you're a guy who should have gone in the first round, and there is no better stage in which to do that than at the World Juniors. So you'd expect big things out of him, no question. But what is he really good at? You know, it's that breakaway speed. It's the ability to handle the puck. It's the ability to get underneath people in on the forecheck and be able to use that strong, compact body, to fight off and protect the puck and to be able to come out of the corners with the puck on the forecheck. So he's going to be a fascinating guy to watch to me. Now, I guess the one question that I have, even going back to where he was last year, is there a consistent enough ability to finish? And it would be my same question with all of this forward group for Sweden. Is there a consistent enough ability for them to finish, to make them an elite team, to make them a gold medal contender?
I would like to add more to this conversation, but seeing that my good friend just hit on the same 7 points that I would have offered up, I can't. He is. He's an intriguing guy, but again, even in the summer, lots of chances, not as many turning on the red light as even in that summer showcase would have unveiled.
Which brings us to Finland. What an interesting country. It's boom or bust when it comes to this event. Look at the history over the last few years. In 2014, you had mentioned the Rasmus Ristolainen goal in overtime, but they win gold in Sweden. Then it's out of the medals. Then it's a gold in 2016. The last 2 years, out of the medals, and then another gold last year here in Vancouver, Victoria. It's boom or bust for this group, but they've quickly risen the ranks. Is this a team that year in and year out now, Sammy, has to be considered in the top echelon?
I think so. I think we've found that stride with the Finns, and it is kind of interesting how it's gone from that high to that low with this group. We were talking about relegation a couple of years ago with this group. I mean, to think that that was even a possibility was beyond stunning. But, you know, a good indicator is what happens early in the draft. And when you think about all the, you know, the Kotkaniemis of the world and the Laineys of the world, and you think about how much success they've had, especially early in the draft, Kaapo Kakko, so on and so forth, that's usually a pretty good indicator of what's happening at the lower levels and their ability to develop players, their ability for their players at a young age to be able to play in a really good league is helpful, you know, and their ability to get into those international tournaments, as so many Europeans do when they have that international break in November. But I like where they're at. And I can remember a conversation a couple of years ago with Jarmo Kekäläinen just talking about how they're really doing a good job at the lower levels and focusing on the coaching at the younger levels, at the grassroots levels, where they feel that the skills development is way more important in coaching that stuff then systematic play, then going to win hockey games. And not that they've taken away the winning completely and not that they've blown that off, but the fact of the matter is so much is happening at the grassroots level in Finland with skill development. You're starting to see the fruits of that, you know, really pay dividends here with what we're seeing in the draft. But no doubt they're going to be a contender. They're going to be fired up to beat Sweden on that opening game. And if that happens, that puts himself in good stead moving forward in such a short tournament. But, of course, you have to like the Finns. What's there not to like about them, really?
The one thing about this group is I think they're going to be somewhat challenged to score. This is another group that, you know, when you don't have Kotkaniemi, and who could still, believe it or not, be available, and the young man who was just so incredible at 17. What a year Kaapo Kakko had. Well, outside of winning the World Championship and the World Junior and, you know, the previous year, the World Under 18, other than that, the calendar year stunk for him. and he had his hands all over all of it, which is pretty incredible, and the reason why he's in the National Hockey League and deserves to be in the National Hockey League. And Canada is not the only country anymore in the world, and I think that's a big part of this tournament now. Canada's not the only country missing people because they've elevated and they're ready to be and are playing in the United States. That's a world issue now, and it's part of this tournament. But for the Finns, I love how they play. You know where they're never cheated? Work.
Yeah, working, yeah.
They
I agree.
Do the work. And the other part of this group that fascinates me is they might have as good a defenseman, potentially, as there is. Because if you don't think Ville Heinola isn't the real deal, keep looking. Who was on the ice in the last 2 minutes of the gold medal game against the United States? Him. Who started this year in the United States in the NHL in Winnipeg? Him.
Ville.
Elite skater. To me, just kind of maybe Miro Heiskanen light. And again, a guy who's won a couple of things already. Lassie Thompson, who decided not to go back to Kelowna, Ottawa first rounder. You know, Honka, the younger brother of Julius Honka, that didn't necessarily turn out, but a really dynamic. And even, you know, a guy who could be their captain, Tony Utinen.
Utinen, yes.
You know, a Vancouver pick who more than held his own last year and helping that country win. And, you know, he scored a goal in one game I just as soon forget. But, you know, that happened and helped propel them to a gold medal. Listen, I love this country. I do. I have a real soft spot for where they've come. They have 5 million people in their country. They work. They're never cheated on the work. And I think, unlike some others, team, however they have gotten to that point, they're proud. Their victory even last spring at the World Hockey Championships is one of the greatest accomplishments in the sport I have ever seen. What they did with that lineup against other teams' lineups, and you know how you do that? You do it because you believe in the process and you believe in one another and you play as a team. They're good at it.
Them. You know, it's funny, Pete, that you talk about them in the same vein as Sweden. Are they going to be able to get it done up front? You think about some of their younger guys, the Rattes. You think about Puistola. You think about Kupari. Now, he's a bit older, but is Anton Lundell hasn't had anywhere near the year beset
and
by
he's been
injuries.
Hurt.
Is he going to be healthy enough to play?
Right.
I mean, those are the question marks you have. And if those guys can answer some of the questions of the Fajamos and the Raymonds and the Holtzes, you're going to see two pretty even teams because both of the back ends from these countries can really skate and move the puck, and the forward groups have some question because of their youth and their experience and being able to finish it. I do see them as a very similar team to Sweden.
And who's going to stop it? Don't forget about how big the Ontario Hockey League goaltender was in that run to a title for Finland.
And UPL.
Yes, Luukkonen. And I'm not sure that they necessarily have that type of guy, but they might. You know, they're pretty good at producing goalies. And for the Swedes, Hugo Ahnfeldt, who's having a really nice year in the Swedish Hockey League, he backstopped them to a gold medal in the spring at the World Under 18, and that was no easy chore, I might add. You know, does he give them a bit of an edge on day one in that very, very important matchup in that group? I will say one thing. If you are Canada, the United States, and Russia, who, and don't forget about the Czechs, they'll be dangerous. They're at home. They've got some good pieces, too. You don't want to end up in the three hole in that group when the round robin's over, because it means you're getting one of those other two in a quarter. That's not a good place to start.
As for the Finns, it's funny, you know, the way these cycles work. Once in a while, there's a player who you feel has played at the World Juniors for like seven straight years. For me, this year, out of all the teams, that's Rasmus Kapari of the Finns. Feels like he's played at this event since I was a kid.
Yeah, well, then you're not a kid anymore, by the way.
Check that guy's driver's license, somebody.
We better not start about checking people's passports, especially not this week. Come on, Kovalchuk.
It is the 2020 World Junior Preview Show. Well, we're going to take another look at some of the other teams, the teams that are trending up. The Czechs are at home. The Germans boast a couple of big-time stars, including one really interesting defenseman I want to get into. But first, the Russians, guys. Canucks prospect Vasily Podkolzin and company. Where are they at?
They're good again. Yep. And if this guy, the youngster, can take the reins and goal like he has several times internationally previously, it might not matter what they do up front. They might be able to win 1-0 or 2-1 every game. That's how good this guy is. And I think by the time we get to June, I don't think there's any question he'll be a top 10, but he may be a top 5 pick in the National Hockey League. Yaroslav Askarov.
Oof.
Keep an eye out for this guy.
You don't have to ask twice.
Romanov on the back. Absolute stud. Guy could probably play in the NHL right now. You look at the rest of their group on the back, there's no real big names that stick out. Zamula's had a good year playing with the Calgary Hitmen. And you look at some of their other guys, more steady Eddie types who just kind of take care of business on their own end, get rid of the puck, get it to the forward group, and that's where you find some unbelievable talent. You know, you think about Denisenko, you think about Podkolzin, Marchenko's a guy who's, you know, had a lot of success. Sorkin, Sokolov. I mean, Max Groshev as a youngster is a guy I think is an opportunity to maybe do some really good things. They're good. They're all around. They're good. And there's no weaknesses in this group. It's not like I'm looking at this group like I am the Swedes or the Finns and saying, you know what? I think they're going to have some issues scoring. The problem with the Russians is their ability to sleepwalk at times when it doesn't really matter. And then taking that and then turning it up a notch when it does matter, it doesn't always get to the level it needs to be. So sometimes they're their own worst enemy in terms of not bringing it from game one. You know, when you look at Canada, no choice but to bring it in game one moving forward. When you look at the U.S., it's the same thing. You look at the Swedes or the Finns, same sort of thing. Are the Russians against the Czechs in game one going to have to bring it? Or are they going to kind of sleep their way through it, say, yeah, you know what, we'll do what we can here. We'll probably get a win against the Germans, you know what, we'll get a point against either the U.S. or Canada. We'll make it into the quarters, no big deal. That tends to be the biggest downfall with this group, is being able to dial it up from the start and keep it dialed in right on through the event.
You know what's interesting is if you rewind the clock to Buffalo, and the Russians had a pretty good team in Buffalo. I mean,
I'd rather not.
Okay. All right. All right.
But, wait. Which tournament in Buffalo? You know the one I don't
want to
watch.
No, I'm thinking 2011.
Oh, because guess what? Really want to remember 2011, too. Nothing I like more as a Canadian than having a 3-0 third period lead and watching Tarasenko and company roll off for five. No, I won't forget, but thank you for... No, I'm talking about 2018 in Buffalo.
Right.
Okay,
right.
2018, and you guys, you might remember, but guess what? The Russians are starting in 2020 against the same country that they started off against in 2018, and that's the Czech Republic, except this time the Czech Republic is at home. Guess who won that game on Boxing Day of 2018? The Czechs. So further to Sam's point, now, because of the pool that, you know, we're calling it the somewhat World Junior pool of death, they play the Czechs in their own country. I don't know if they're going to have a chance to sleepwalk, and if they do, they're going to deal with Canada in their second game. So that pool, again, I gotta keep my feet on the ground. I'm pacing around over here already. It's too early, but they are good. They have it all, I think, the Russians. Probably have as good a goalie. Askarov and Knight, to me, probably top two in the event.
Yeah.
Solid guys. You talked about Romanov. They're back in. Denisenko, you might forget, but tied for the tournament lead last year in scoring with 9 points. the years Havanov and Sokolov are having in the Quebec League, outstanding in Cape Breton and Moncton. They've got a little of everything over there, and a pretty wily coach that, you know, Sammy forgot more about than most of us will ever know in Valeri Bragin in international ice. So that's a little different this year. So we'll see.
Well, and I really like Romanov, too, and he had 8 points last year here in Vancouver and Victoria. An absolute steal for the Canadiens in the second round, and Montreal fans will be watching this guy. Who does he remind you of the most, Sammy? Is there a comparable there for Romanov?
You know what? A little bit of Shea Weber, to be honest with you, because he's big. He has presence out there. He'll run you over. He shoots the puck really well. He defends well. And you know, when we thought of Shea Weber coming into the league, there was an offensive side to his game. So he really reminds me a lot, that same sort of, you know, piss and vinegar he plays with. He reminds me a lot of Shea Weber.
I liked him last year a lot. You know, I unfortunately for me, my schedule didn't quite allow me to dig into it the same way that I normally did, and spent too much time in another country where I didn't have the same kind of access. And you know me, whoever knows me about technology, that's not my strong suit. So it made last year's viewing a little bit more difficult. But what I've always noticed about him, from even when I saw him at a younger level, he's always in the mix. You never watch without him having an impact. He's in the middle of everything, and he can shoot it. And he makes some smart plays. And again, is he as dynamic as a Quinn Hughes type? No. But do I trust this guy in a foxhole when it's hard? I do, because that's where you always find him.
It's Andrew Walker, Sam Cosentino, and Peter Labardius. When we come back, a quick look at the Czechs and the Germans, and we'll revisit some past tournaments and take one more look at Team Canada heading into the 2020 World Juniors on Boxing Day in the Czech Republic. You're listening to the World Junior Preview Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back. One final segment of the 2020 World Junior Preview Show here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Andrew Walker from Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. We have Sam Cosentino joining us from Toronto, our Sportsnet Junior Insider, and Peter Labardius from Sportsnet 960 The Fan in Calgary. Want to reset Team Canada, our expectations, their chances in a big time group beginning on Boxing Day in the Czech Republic. But first, guys, the host team. Stranger things have happened. This Czech Republic squad has not medaled for a while. They're a 24-1 long shot to win this thing. But like Sammy touched on earlier, playing the Russians on night one on Boxing Day, this is going to be a fired up home team. What to make of the Czechs and who to watch for?
Always dangerous on home ice, so that's a huge consideration. A little bit bigger camp, knowing that, you know, what's at stake and what's on the line here for this group. I like what they have in goal. I think Dostal is a guy that can be a real game changer. I'm not as familiar with some of their guys in the back end. A couple of them play in the CHL, so there is a little bit of familiarity there. But up front, you know, some guys I am familiar with when it comes to Tepley, Raska, Lauko, Pitlick, I watched just a couple of weeks ago, Chaika. There's some guys, Mishak is a younger player, that I think can really do some damage up front. And that's going to be the big question mark for me. With my not-so-great knowledge of what they have in the back, are they going to be able to transport the puck into the forward group's hands? And if they can do that, I think they're going to be able to score some goals here. I think they're going to be able to backstop pretty good. But that defense score, to me, is the big question mark amongst this group.
Yeah, of a lot of countries, that's not an area of strength. It's not. One thing that I do like about this collection, if history has anything to do with it, they've been some pretty good in younger events. A matter of fact, 2017, it was still the Hlinka tournament then without the Gretzky part of it, they finished second. So as far as their 19-year-old collection, actually that's not a bad 19-year-old collection.
Yep.
And that's no easy feat in that tournament in the summer, even to be second. you know, Canada won it. They were second, and they were a good team. And in that tournament, for me, the two guys that I couldn't take my eyes off were the guy, you know, Yannick, who's having an incredible year in Hamilton.
My goodness.
22-56, fourth in the league at this time of taping. And Lauko. Go back to the spring and the Memorial Cup.
Oh, speed.
Speed. Make things happen. Those were the two guys. It's the thing I love about just watching people progress, and you guys both know that's probably my favorite thing about watching the sport and this tournament in particular, is you see them at 16 and 17, and those two guys from that country, I couldn't take my eyes off them in that particular event. And I thought Lauko was a real matchup winner in that tournament, and especially in the final against Halifax in the spring. He was a big, big difference maker. And Dostal's having a real nice year in the Finnish league, where his goals against is 192 and a 923. That's never easy against, you know, very talented older people. I don't like the defense. I'm just not. And again, in their grouping, here's what's going to be interesting. They're very likely to finish fourth in the group. Oh boy, Sweden, if you finish first and you get another quarterfinal date with those guys in their rank.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's easy to project. But yeah, if they had even two more guys on the back, then I don't even know what we'd call that group.
You know, the one thing I'll say is I heard some really good things about Yannick. I talked to Kevin Ball about him. The two of them spent a good portion of the summer in Arizona, both Coyotes prospects.
Yeah.
And Ball, who's a pretty good competitor in his own right, said to me, I have never met a guy so competitive in my life as this Yannick. He's crazy. You know, he competes in the washroom, this guy. He wants to go to the bathroom longer than you do. I mean, that's the kind of guy that this guy is.
That's quite the competition.
Yeah. He's unbelievable. I mean, so if he can drag some people into the fight with him, it's going to be interesting to watch. I don't know if he's going to wear a letter for this club, but based on everything I heard when you talk peer-to-peer, that's a really impressive compliment from Kevin Ball, so it'll be fun to watch this guy.
You know what's the other interesting thing that, and I'll just say this quickly because I know we're running out of time and we could do this for 3 days, is even a guy like Zabransky. Sometimes in these events, you know, you talk about the Finns. Okay, how they might play over here or what the next step might be is one thing. But again, how well do they play as a team? And the one thing I like about the Czechs is, again, that age group, know one another. And these kids, trust me, that are spread all over creation, they're excited about having a chance to get back together. Because that matters,
and play
too.
For their country on home ice. There's a huge motivational factor there, no doubt.
And real quickly, guys, on the Germans, we talk about programs that are up and coming, and we don't expect much of Germany, but from the outside looking in, this is clearly a nation that's developing higher-end players. We've seen born and bred Leon Draisaitl. He's now, man, conservatively, it feels like a top-five player in the National Hockey League. Moritz Seider went sixth overall to the Detroit Red Wings, and coaches just rave about this defenseman, what to expect from the Germans, and most notably, their stars.
Don't sleep. Do not sleep on the Germans. They're going to bite somebody here in pool play right away.
Ooh.
Yes.
What a
yes,
call.
Yes, they will.
What a call.
They're going to bite somebody. Stützle is going to be a top 10 pick in the draft. Seider's got all kinds of leadership capabilities. He helped wield this team to the D2 title last year to get promoted into playing into this group. Dominic Box, a guy not a lot of people are talking about, Carolina Hurricanes prospect who was already traded once in the National Hockey League. You know, they've got a few guys here that can bite you. And I think when they come together as a group, they're going to walk in there and use that us against the world mentality. And they may have just enough pieces with Reichel and a couple of other guys that I truly believe they're going to come up and bite somebody. And if I had to guess, I'd probably say the Russians. Because they're going to walk in there, the Russians, and they're going to be sleepy on this group. And they're going to get it in for a real big surprise here. And Germany's going to be the author of that surprise. If it's not the Russians, look out. They're going to come and bite somebody. I'm not exactly sure. I think the Russians are the most ripe for the picking.
Stützle's having an unbelievable year in Mannheim, averaging almost a point a game. I've heard nothing but incredible things. Most people, and Sammy, you're way more in the know at this point than I am on this front. Top 10 all day. top 10 all day at this point. We'll see where it goes. Guess what? Mr. and Mrs. Stutzel, you can book your tickets right now for Edmonton and Red Deer, because this group's not going to get relegated.
Wow.
It's Andrew Walker, Sam Costantino, and Peter Labardius. Let's do some quick hitters here before we wrap it up, guys. And one of the topic that I always love is every year there's that unsung hero, call him a grinder or maybe someone that scores some big goals that the country just instantly falls in love with. And we've had plenty of them over the years, whether it's, the Stefan Legions or the Matt Halaschucks, you know the group.
Yep.
Who is that guy this year for Team Canada?
It'll be Ty Dellandrea. It'll be Ty Dellandrea, the Dallas first rounder. And here's a guy whose effort never wanes. He loves coming to the rink. He's got a smile on his face. He's had all kinds of adversity in terms of his hockey career already, seeing Flint through the good, the bad, and the ugly, and now what is back into the, a pretty good cycle for Flint. And he's never really had that opportunity to be the shining light. And while he may not be the top scorer and he may not be, the number one guy on the power play, you're going to see him win draws. You'll see him on the PK. You'll see him working his tail off. You'll see him throw some bumps that will surprise some people, and you will get a max effort from this guy. He'd be my guy as the pick to click, as that unsung grinder type of player for Canada.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for knowing you and for helping me in my book, because I got 3 stars right beside one name in the book, and that's Ty Dellandrea. So does that mean I have to go to a different place? You know what? I'm just going to go to a
different... I'm sure you have another guy.
Well, I do, and I don't know if he fits this mold, but I think we're about to learn a lot about Quentin Byfield, and we haven't talked about him, and I know he has a great chance to be a top 6 guy. This isn't a real plumber type. Akil Thomas, for me, too, might be another one of those people that maybe isn't found, in the top couple of groups. Yeah, there's a lot of guys, but Byfield, I cannot wait to see this guy. You know who the comparable is for me? Malkin. 6'4", the way he skates, he's already 215. He's probably going to be 222, 225. I'm fascinated by this guy, and it's a lot to ask of a 17-year-old. So I don't know if he fits, but because Sammy took my guy, I'm going to talk about Byfield.
Well, and a lot of times, fourth liners at this tournament go on to be quality fourth liners in the NHL. Was there one of these players over all the World Juniors that you've covered that turned out to be a much better pro than you anticipated?
Wayne Simmons for me. You could see it in his game and Owen Sound. There was such a rawness to his game, but he had a lot of really interesting dynamics to his game. The size, speed, his ability to play an old school physical game. Yet you couldn't sleep on him when he had the puck inside the home plate area. So he's a guy for me who I thought, wow, he's made a giant step here. He's made it in the World Junior team. But how is it going to play out in terms of his National Hockey League career? He may be on the backside. He might be on the back nine in terms of his NHL career right now. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what he's done over the course of his career, probably a guy that surprised me a little bit in terms of success that he's had, and being able to translate his game and take some of that rawness, refine it, and then apply it in a very successful fashion in the National Hockey League.
Sammy, that's a great answer. There's a lot of different ways to go with this, and of all the questions that you threw out, Walks, and on your email yesterday, this one is the one that I found the most troubling. But here's a guy that comes to mind, and he wasn't necessarily a fourth liner on this team, but if you think about Canada's entry in 2006 in Vancouver, that group was kind of loaded with, if you will, grinder, plumber, not star yes. types. I think for me, one of the greatest Canadian victories in terms of expectation and how Brent Sutter and company were able to mold them into a gold medal, how young they were on defense. Here's the guy for me. And has he had a great NHL career? No. But is he still playing at a decent level? You know who it is? It's Blake Como.
It's Blake Como.
And Blake Como, you go back to that game in Vancouver, gold medal against Malkin and a way more talented Russian team, scores a huge first period goal in that event. He and Steve Downey's checking job that night on Evgeny Malkin and friends, one of the greatest I've ever seen. Maybe only Robbie DeMaio on McGillney back in 1988. And I know that's going away back for a lot of our listeners would be, you know, another one of those that comes to mind. But you know what? Blake Como, Memorial Cup winner, 2004 in Kelowna, always a good player, was on that team like so many others. Michael Blunden with two goals in that gold medal game. That was a very, you know, workman-like forward group that won a gold medal. So I know there's lots of others, and, you know, in this brain, it's working about 7,000 miles an hour, but Blake Como is one of those guys that comes to mind for me.
Yeah, and for me, it goes without saying, he was not necessarily a plumber on those entries, but Brad Marchand turned into an absolute superstar in the NHL. Maybe we didn't see that. And the other one, I mean, we had a really shoddy run of goaltending as a country, and one of those, you know, quote-unquote shoddy goaltenders was Jordan Binnington, who gave up a ton of goals and couldn't get the job done. And then you fast-forward about 10 years later, 8 years later, and this guy's winning a Stanley Cup in dramatic fashion with the St. Louis Blues. It takes some time sometimes.
Those are good. And, Sammy, I would say that we could both see a little of that in 17-year-old Jordan Binnington at 17 and leading Owen Sound to the Memorial Cup.
Yeah, as part of that three-goalie monster that they had, you know, in Sound. I think Michael Zadore was one, Scott Stager, a whole bunch of names come to mind there.
But he ended up being the guy.
Being the guy, yeah. He emerged from the pack.
Well, guys, before we say goodbye as the World Junior Preview Show rolls on, let's reset Team Canada really quick. What are your expectations on the identity of this club and the players to watch come Boxing Day?
Hardworking, speed, trap and transition. The goaltending to me is fascinating. Now, I didn't give Olivier Rodrigue probably the credit he deserves. I mean, he is a gold medal winner. But the other two, no program of excellence experience.
Nope.
So the way I look at it is Rodrigue is a guy who's going to give you probably a 905 and a three goals against, and he's probably not likely to steal you any games. I think in order for this team to get into a medal situation, they're going to need a thievery of some point, and I don't know if Rodrigue is going to be the guy to be able to provide that. Might be Hofer, might be Dawes. Dawes is the more likely candidate in my eyes. So that part interests me. I like the back end, some experience to keep things settled, a couple of young dynamic guys, Byram, Drysdale, and then I look at the forward group and think about, all right, Lafreniere, Hayton, Valeno, Cousins. And things are looking a little bit better to me than maybe first blush. Some help from, you know, from the pro teams, obviously, was big getting Hayton back. And Valeno, of course, Lafreniere, looks like he'll be healthy and ready to go with that ankle after some time off. But I look at this group as a medal, any kind of medal, I think is going to be a really good accomplishment based on some of that inexperience and goal and based on some of the youth up front.
I'm in exactly the same boat, and what fascinates me the most as far as expectation, here's how I would categorize it. I really like the sum of the parts. I really like the defense. I don't love the sum of the parts. So winning a medal in this competition, could it be golden? Yes, it could. Could it be bronze? Yes, it could. Could it be out of the medals again? Yes, it could. And that's the type of field that they're up against. But number one on my list is we're not going to have to wait long. December 26th, Canada against the United States. December 28th, against Russia. There is no wading into this pool, and we are going to find out a lot very early about the makeup, the people, and how good this Canadian team is. We don't have to even wait to New Year's Eve, when we generally have a pretty good inkling. Buckle in, get your popcorn, get your turkey sandwiches and your gravy, and let's watch and enjoy.
Well, it begins with a bang. Guys, I appreciate you doing this. I enjoyed it as always. Cause, maybe I'll give you a call over the holiday season. Lou, I will not be giving a call to. I will wait till the tournament's done before I reach
second
out to Lou.
Second fiddle again, eh? You know what? That's okay.
Well, maybe
the old guy, listen, at 54, well, here's my role. You set the table and you let others eat, and that's just fine.
Don't feel bad about it, Walk. He won't even want to talk to his own family at that time when these games are going on.
I'd
call, except he wouldn't pick up.
Well, it'd be a lot like you answering emails.
Oh, that'll leave a mark.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Thanks,
you think you're bad with technology. Hey, thanks, fellas.
Okay.
For Sam Cosentino from Sportsnet and Peter Labardius from Sportsnet 960 The Fan, this is Andrew Walker. You've been listening to the 2020 World Junior Preview Show everywhere on the Sportsnet Radio Network.